There are certainly a great number of things that I remember about the day that I became a husband. But I think one of the first and certainly one of the sharpest memories that I have is the moment that my soon bride-to-be turned the corner and stood opposite me down the aisle, and I was able to get a glimpse of her in her white dress. Now, I'm not a religious person, you guys know this, but I do believe in angels in the sense that I've seen one. In my all of the 40 years that I've been alive, 41, I have seen one angel. And there she stood, just maybe 30 feet from me. And soon she'd be walking down towards me and I would become hers and she would become mine. Now, perhaps that's an antiquated way of looking at it. I mean, you know, everybody's supposed to have their own agency, but one of the pillars of who I am is the fact that I am Nicole's husband. That in a lot of the things that I say and do, a running thread of how I go about making decisions is the fact that I am making them not just for them myself, but I am making them because I am married to a wonderful person and that what I do affects her. Now, that would lead you to think that I'm a perfect husband and that I never do anything wrong. That couldn't be further from the truth. There are a lot of mistakes that I still make in life, and I am always so sorry when I make them, because you would think that having such a clear lens would lead for a straighter path, but that's not how I'm built. I am an extremely flawed person, and sometimes love is not enough. I'm not telling this to bum you out. I was talking about the first memory, and I guess going back to that, was seeing her in her green and in her white dress. What came upon me was a feeling of lust. I was awash with it. Prior to this, one of the first times that we all went out as a group together, I remember her wearing these blue shorty shorts. They weren't quite booty shorts, but they were high enough where you can start to see the curvature of her tushy. And I was enthralled by her, just her, you know, ivory skin in the sun, you know, in that smell of copper tone that she used to wear to make sure that she didn't get sunburned. It was amazing. It was intoxicating. I couldn't get enough of it. Or when during the summer times when we spent pretty much every single day that we weren't in classes down by the beach, and she would wear these super tiny cute bikinis that when she went towards the water, I would just stare at her and just see this goddess, you know, heading into the water. It was enthralling. Or when she would have to go to, you know, when she was in classes and she was in her jeans and her shirts and she just looked like a cute little co-ed. I mean, I had a hot girlfriend. I had a hot fiance. And now all of a sudden, though, seeing her in her dress, I had standing there in front of me, mere feet away, I had a woman that would be coming towards me. And prior to that, I had never been with a woman. I had never made love to a woman. I had made love to a, you know, terrific young lady, but I had not made love to a woman. And the realization that soon I would kind of just triggered something in my lizard brain that made the hair on my arms and my legs just stand on end. I was truly enraptured by her. No, that moment was transitory. It came and it went super fast, because then the realization that this woman would now become my wife really hit in. And then, you know, the affection and the care, and also the how grand the step that we were going to be taking together also took over, and commitment really became the next set of feelings that I became cognizant of. But yes, that very first moment was of lust. It was the fact that I would be making love to a woman, and I would be making love to a woman for the rest of my life. Because for me, and this is me, and I believe this is her truly, I mean, we were going to be together forever, or we would be. And hey, listen, we still are. Don't worry, this does not have a bad ending in that sense. The reason why I wanted to talk to you guys today is because our wedding ceremony, it lasted all of 15 minutes. It was very, very fast. And then, of course, we went and did photographs. And soon afterwards, you know, we went down the way in Pasadena, California, and at our wedding reception. That was all of 2 hours because we wanted to have something very small. The way that she and I have always lived our life is that it's about us. And yes, there are people in the periphery that are very important and whatnot. But at the end of the day, we make a decision as a unit. She and her and I, we decide what's going to happen. Now, our little twosome has grown into four now that we have a larger family. And we all together as a unit make decisions. But it's about our family. And that does not mean that does not limit us from being charitable. That doesn't limit us from being helpful to others. But at the end of the day, we take care of our own. We're our own little group. But that's neither here nor there. So we take the photos. We have the reception. It is very intimate, very quick. And then all of a sudden, we pack up all of the gifts and everything, and we get back into our old Jeep, and within 30 minutes drive, we're at our condo, the one that we've been living in for about a year. And we stood there, kind of panting from just a frenzied day, and you all of a sudden realize, we're back home. She's putting on jeans because we were going to do our short honeymoon later that evening. We would be driving to Las Vegas for our honeymoon. But all of a sudden, you had about a span of a couple of hours where I went to the fridge and I poured myself a glass of our orange juice. She went to our bedroom and she put on some old pants so that we can start kind of triaging the gifts, the money that we have received, and, you know, kind of put things away. Our dog came to our feet and started licking us and bouncing. He was unaware that something different had happened, that now, all of a sudden, the people that were there, they were a married pair. All of us, it's one of the weirdest feelings in the world of walking back into your life after such a momentous moment, something that you've been working up to for months, and all of a sudden, you are the same people that you were before, but now there's a title. Now there are signatures on the paper that bind you together for all time and that hopefully will not destroy you later on, or you will use that signed documents to destroy one another. But all of a sudden, you're back to being just you. And I've never gone past that, or I've never forgotten that feeling of that. And why it's coming to a head now is because I've had a series of those days now. My daughter just recently graduated from school, and she's off traveling now, and she's all of 11 years old. But she has her graduation ended our tenure at the elementary school that, you know, had been pretty basically, you know, home for us for the last 7 to 8 years. Both my children graduated from this same elementary school, and we were part of the PTA there. We were involved in pretty much from the kindergarten to fifth grade. We were involved in fundraisers. We were involved in field days. We were involved in parades. Our life was a big chunk of our life was spent in that school. With the drama that's involved with it, but also with all of the wonderful things. We went through three principals together, each one bringing her own flavor to the campus. We had arguments with other parents about, you know, things that are important to school life, but we also made some of the greatest friends that we've ever had on that campus. And then all of a sudden, in a day, an overcast June day in 2019, my last kiddo graduates from this place, and we're done. They're alumni now, and we're parents of alumni now, but their time there is done. Their return now will be different. And it's ironic it's funny because their school is walking distance from where we live. I could run there in 3 minutes and come back. I know that because we have any time that my kids forgot their lunch. Guess who was biking his butt down there to give it to him, him or her. So it's everything is within the earshot, but that place now is different. I know that I've been on this podcast before. I talked about the story of how I met my wife, or in our first date, and you know, without going into it from start to finish, if you'll recall, the first time that I ever came to pick her up, I happened to drive by that little school that my children now graduated from, and I always wondered then, being a poor kid coming into a relatively more, you know, richer neighborhood, of what it would be like to have children who went to that school. And now not only had I realized that they had gone to the school, but they had graduated, and I will no longer play a part in it, at least not in the same way that I had before. And then after the graduation's done and we said all our hugs and all our goodbyes and everybody walked away, we basically walked back to our home, and my kid, kid you not, went to the fridge and poured herself a glass of orange juice. All of a sudden now, her day is done. Her special day is done. All the work and all of that is done. And she had to go change from her, you know, frilly, beautiful dress that she wore and got back into her civilian clothes. And now she was just a kid. Her summer vacation is in this this limbo stage where she's no longer an elementary school kid and will soon be in middle school. But right now she's just free. And all of a sudden, all this work, all of this effort, in a 20-minute, maybe in a half an hour graduation ceremony, it had all culminated and it was done. And now it was a regular day. Or I think back just a couple of years ago about my naturalization ceremony. As many of you know, I became a naturalized citizen about 2 years ago. Because the climate in the United States was changing. I had been a legal immigrant for a long time, but you know, with things being as they are now in the climate that we're in, you don't know when they were going to change the rules, if they were going to change the rules. And I thought, well, this is a better time for me to just get this done and become the citizen that I've always wanted to be and that I think I've always behaved like. And so I studied for months. I went through paperwork. I had to go to courthouses to be interviewed by immigration staff, had to go through background checks, had to go through that awkward feeling of, are they going to let me stay in the country or are they not? What if they don't for whatever reason? Although I have never done anything wrong, what if they say, you know, Hugo, this country doesn't need you. You're not good enough for the United States, or we don't feel that you are the kind of person that we have. You're not one of their best. Wherever that fucking means. But no, finally, after all that time, I went to the Civic Center in Pasadena, California, and myself and thousands of other people swore an oath to become American citizens. And soon afterwards, they took the only little green, I mean, the only little piece of paper, they used to call it a green card, but it was my permanent resident card, and they yanked that away from me, and they handed me another piece of paper that within it says, you are now an American citizen, and you are imbued now with all of the rights that everybody else gets to enjoy. The same rights that your children have at their fingertips from the moment they are born, now they are yours too. And again, one of those pivotal moments of life, those watershed moments of life where everything has changed. Everything has changed. Now, many of you in the U.S., I'm just like you. In that very elemental sense. And so what do? We get all, you know, my kids were there to witness it. My wife took off from work so that she could be there for me. And all of a sudden, all of us four get in our little car and we head again down the road to where we live now. And for whatever reason, I felt like having McDonald's. And so we sat there eating our Big Macs and fries and whatnot. And I thought, all this work, and now I'm at McDonald's. My wife is now going to then get back to work because she doesn't miss a full day. And I'll go take care of the kids at home. And I'm back to being regular old Hugo. Weird, right? And there's so many other, you know, times when that happens. I was, you know, again, graduations, but I was, you know, thinking the also of a lot of you who have parents, who are parents, and who for 9 months you've been going through this exercise of, you know, or exercise, but you've been going through the adventure of, you know, the getting the room put together, discovering the sex of your kiddo, if you're going to do that, you know, getting the room together for it, arranging your finances, arranging your work life, figuring out how is it that you are going to take care of this brand new life into this world. And all of a sudden, at the hospital, you're let go, and they put this little life in the backseat of your car, and you drive home, and then there's that moment where you put the key in, you turn it, you open the door, and that smell of your home comes at you, and you realize, I am walking into the same place that I have for a dozen years, but now all of a sudden there's a new life within it. And it is both familiar and it is strange. And now, everybody has dissipated about you. Everybody's gone. It's only you and your wife and this new baby, and you're both brand new into this adventure with a new life, and you're also in the most familiar place that you'll be. It's an odd feeling, and that's where I wanted to talk to you guys. Because if you have been going through this recently, you understand that there's an emptiness that comes right after you reach the goal that you set out to achieve. Ironically, one of the highest highs that you will have is reaching the zenith of what you wanted to become or wanted to have happen. And then there's that realization that almost automatically right afterwards of, now what the fuck do I do? What happens next? Who am I after this? I'm now back to being regular. And there's that emptiness. And or maybe I'm strange. Maybe that doesn't happen to you. Maybe you just write it out and you're exuberant about it. But for me, almost immediately, right after I've accomplished something wonderful or I've reached the pinnacle of a place, and met a goal, that emptiness comes awash. And so from that standpoint, I wanted to offer you three things that I do to try to cope with that sadness, that depression, that's, you know, that emotion of emptiness. And the first one is to realize this is part of my process. I become sad. I get sad the moment that it happens. And that's okay. It's all right to understand that. It's okay to process that. It's okay to realize that, you know, to every action there's a reaction, and that for, you know, the moment that you have success, at least for me, that I'm going to get that depression. But now that I've felt it, now that I'm processing it, I will have to now then refocus my energy. And that's where number two comes in. So number one is, you're going to be sad, and that's all right, but don't dwell on it. Next thing I think you need to do is, whether you have a journal or you have, or you're on your computer or you put it in the notes in your phone, but start writing out new goals. Reset your mind towards what's next for you. And I'm not talking about big lofty goals. I'm talking about short goals, things that you can accomplish, small things that you can start working on right away, so that your mind starts taking the energy that you would spend on the wallowing and starts spending it on towards re-achieving again. That's the dim and dale of life. You are going to, you know, get to the top of the crest, and then you're going to fall back down. But there's other crests that you need to climb up on. There's other mountains that you need to reach. So start writing those down. And they all don't all need to be, you know, Mount Everest. But the moment that you are done processing with the sadness, start writing out new goals. Start putting those, you know, starting putting that list together and write it out. The importance of writing it out or noting it down is that you can go back to reference it. It does you no good to just have it in your head. You have to go back and look at it, because you will have moments of doubt. And that's where the list comes in. And third, I think you don't start mythologizing yourself. That will come later. I'm a big storyteller. Part of the reason why I started the podcast is because I wanted to tell stories, and in a lot of ways I've come to mythologize things. That was the whole beginning of this, you know, the recording is how I've mythologized my wedding day in those first few moments. But if you start looking back the moment that you've reached the zenith, I think that you're cheating yourself from A, the process of being sad, and also starting to achieve the next thing. How many of you remember the guy that, or girl, gal, whatever, that continues to, every single time you meet them, all they're doing is reliving their high school days. That's all they can talk about, is when I scored touchdown here and I was the big man on campus, or, you know, I was the most popular kid, blah, 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 blah. They mythologize the highlights of their life, and now that is the only story that they have, and that prevents them from going and achieving and moving on to the next crest. Don't mythologize. Trust me, you will do it eventually. But you need to focus on the next thing before you start writing your memoirs. Life is very, very long, and there are many things that you can accomplish. But if you arrest your development by, you know, starting believing your own press, you stun your opportunity to move forward and to achieve more and to pursue other things. Life is an adventure, and adventure requires movement. And if you stop moving because you're only looking back, then you're robbing yourself an opportunity for more. Like I said, there's a lot of things that I remember about my wedding day. A lot of wonderful, great things. And it's been 20 plus years now that I've been with this woman, and it's been about 18 years since we've been married. And you never know how the story is going to end. We have written out several goals for ourselves, and I have my own of things that I wanted to accomplish. I think that as I look towards the future, I sometimes think about the possibility, because it's not written in stone, of the day when I'm an old man sitting at a church watching my son or my daughter coming down the aisle, getting and ready to prepare to marry the person that they're going to spend the rest of their life with. And in that moment, Pachelbel's, I think that's how you pronounce his bells, Canon in D major, which is the music that started in the beginning of this podcast, will start playing. And I'll tear up, because that's how I am. I imagine seeing my son's gaze when he first sees the man or woman that he will want to spend the rest of the time with, or see my daughter looking at the man or woman that she'll choose to marry. And I'll be overcome with this utter joy of having raised independent kids who are choosing the very best for themselves. And then they'll have their moment. It'll be transitory. And then I have a feeling I'll grab my wife's hand and head towards the car and do the short drive, maybe, back to our home. And then, once we've opened the door and start getting ready to go to bed, right before that happens, I'll open the refrigerator and pour myself a glass of juice. Peace.